Welcome to the Market Meter Podcast. My name is Sure, Anthony Sure. I'm a markets enthusiast, a blogger, and I trade from time to time. We're glad to have you with us on this channel.
My name is Riker Damara. I'm a fund manager by profession. And welcome as we continue this journey in the financial markets.
Hey everyone, my name is Abraham Wakiaga, a lawyer with a keen interest in financial and capital markets law. And I'm excited to, of course, be a part of this discussion.
So we thought, for first episode, the best way to give you, our audience, the best impression of who we are as a podcast, is to share with you our investment journeys or how exactly we got introduced to the investment world. Riker, you can start us off.
Well, as I said earlier, my name is Riker Damara. I started my investment journey actually by accident. After high school, I went to the University of Nairobi and I did actuarial science for starters. I used to be one of those people who used to say, I'll be investing in stocks, I'll be trading, but I never really got to do the hang of it. There was this one time I started reading off some videos about financial markets, and I actually ended up watching Game of Thrones instead of reading the financial markets. It was very boring to me. So one thing led to another. My grades performed very poorly at UON, so I was not able to continue with my actuarial science journey. So when I came back home, I came across a book by Frederick Mishkin. It was entitled The Financial Institutions and Markets. So as I started reading on it, the first page I opened was about foreign exchange market, profiting from it. So that was after trying several times looking for jobs and a graphic design, which I had done as an after high school course, which bore no fruits. So I ended up reading about financial markets. And actually, I could say the change from UN, it started off as a sad note, but leaving UN was, I think, the best thing that has ever happened to me so far, because the amount of opportunities I've gotten up to date has really transformed my life and my perspective towards life in general. As we start off this podcast, I'll be really happy to share my experiences, what I see in the markets, the history of it all, and also encourage someone out there who also want to take that step into understanding what happens in the financial markets. So thank you.
Personally, maybe I would say my journey has been quite different from Riker's, but similar in some respects, because I remember when I was somewhere about high school, actually in about primary, I was asking myself the question, how do people make money? That was just such a big concern to me. And of course, you know the basic things of you have to have your salary then. There will always be this talk about figure out ways to make passive income. So there's something I discovered at the time, which were dividends. And also curious as to how people earn dividends. And that's when I started familiarizing myself with the concepts related to the stock market and what public companies entail. So from there, my enthusiasm and interest grew. Sure, who I was with within high school, or Anthony rather, who I was with in high school, he knows that we had these conversations at length, I think from about Form 2, Form 3. I didn't get to do business studies, but we talk a lot about matters related to investment, and especially investment in the stock market. And then now, as I grew within that field, I remember I opened an account on Investopedia when I was in Form 3, because I was just so eager to learn how to get into it, where you have that chance to take part in the simulation of trading. To be frank, I quite didn't know what was going on, but I just thought it's better off than just doing nothing, proactive in terms of growing myself in that area. So I can say that was where the enthusiasm started to grow, about from three, from four. Then I remember even when it came to interested in pursuing financial economics, but I think my calling was to become a lawyer and not to become an economist like most of you guys here. So those are the foundations, and thereafter I think it's just always been an upward journey, because I started reading much more especially academic articles during my campus time. Then, of course, my interest grew in financial law, where I started understanding things related to capital markets, how finance is regulated, both from the banking side and also just from the financial market side. So this relates to issues of monetary policy, central banks, understanding the history behind them. I hope on the show we'll also get to discuss some of those matters, because there's a legal history also related to central banking and also, of course, the financial markets and how they developed into what they are and how complex they are today with some of these derivatives that are always causing a crisis after the other, or every 20 or 10 years or something of the sort. So yeah, when I look back, a lot of it just came from that one single question: how do you make money? I was just so curious, how are people able to make money? And from that is where my interest grew, and following some of these top investors. Of course, this cliche guy, Warren Buffett, maybe I shouldn't call him a cliche guy, but I mean, everyone knows him, and he's referred to as one of the best investors to have lived because of some of his long-term investments that have paid off. So for me, I think that really sums up where my journey has come from and where it is at the moment. Unfortunately, I'm not an economist or probably trading as professionally, or rather as actively as the rest of the co-hosts, but I'm glad where I am at the moment. So maybe Mbalu can also just chip in.
I started my trading journey immediately after high school, where I joined Rikard in reading and researching about financial markets, and I think I'll be sharing more about my journey as we continue. Thank you.
Well, for me personally, I'm one of those guys who found their interest early in life, and nothing was going to stop me. Like became a better teacher, just find out more about it. So for me, I think even just before I joined high school, I was in class 7 or 8, I don't know. I got an interest in markets. My dad would always buy the newspaper and I'll flip through the pages, and I'll go to the page, that page in the newspaper where there's usually maybe how stocks closed in the previous day in the markets, and money market rates, and foreign exchange rates. And I was always fascinated. I was like, wow, all this information. And I would walk around asking guys, and no one was talking about it around me. I was like, so what is this thing that is important enough to be in the newspaper, but not everyone talks about? My dad was my Google at that point. I would just ask him as much as anything that came to my mind, until I got to a point I realized, whoa, I've reached the limit of this dude's knowledge in this area. So I have to venture out on my own and try to find out more about this. So the one, I don't remember exactly who I talked to, but he was like, oh yeah, if you want to be involved with such things, you have to be a stockbroker. So I had a goal in my mind. So even as I went to school, I went to high school, and I was learning different things, I always had the back of my mind, I wanted to do something around markets. And I think, as Abraham was saying, we used to talk a lot and talk more. And you know, when you surround yourself with people who are curious about the same things you're curious about, it gives a certain level of validity to your thoughts as a person. So you don't think, oh, it was just a childish dream or something. Like, there's validity to this. And there are other people who are fascinated by these things. So I always kept that interest. And when I finished from 4, I actually had time now. I had time on my hands, and I was like, there's this thing I was really curious about. I can finally start exploring and see what this is all about. So that's how my investment journey began, really. It was just a childhood curiosity that grew over time. And I started, my first introduction, my first book I ever read on trading was Trading in the Zone. It's by a trader, very renowned trading psychologist or trainer, might I say. It's called Douglas. The other name was Sleepy, but if you just search Trading in the Zone, you can find the book. And that really blew my mind, because it was a book on trading. I expected it to be, you know, a typical book. I expected to see charts, expected to see lines drawn on charts, technical analysis, basically, for those who know. But it was on psychology. I was like, whoa, okay, trading book, but it's written on psychology. Like, most of the things were just how your mindset when you're approaching the market. And I was really fascinated. So my introduction into trading was from the psychology point of view, and it grew from that point. I opened my first brokerage account at around 15. It was a trading account. It was a forex trading account, I remember. And they required all this information. I spent time just moving around trying to finish the KYC requirements to open an account. And I opened my first account. It was a demo account, and I was overconfident. And of course, I blew it like in a couple of hours, not even days, like hours. I just like it was $10,000 demo account, so it's not real money. But I blew it in like a few hours, and I was like, wow. So I need to do more. So I literally uninstalled the app, the trading app itself, because I knew I was like, I'm not ready for this. I need to consume a lot of information in this area before I even start. And basically, that's how I started off. I would read a lot, and I would try again to trade, and I would land flat on my face. I would lose the whole account. I would think I know everything, and I didn't. And that's how actually I met Rebecca, because I was in a class. I was in a macroeconomics class, I think in second year, and I was trading, looking at charts. I think I was looking at the euro against the dollar, the chart. And Rebecca was sitting next to me, and he asked me, you're trading. I was taken aback because I didn't expect anyone around me to know what was going on in the phone. And then one thing led to another, and we just got into conversation, and that's how I actually became friends. So that's how I grew. I started off technical analysis is just analyzing charts, looking at the historical price movements and making your decision based on that. And over time, I would watch financial news media, and I would see all these fund managers, guys managing millions and billions of dollars. And none of them will talk about, oh, price has reached this level, so you should buy its support or its resistance. None of them talk technicals. They will not talk about macroeconomics. They will talk about monetary policy. They will talk about what's happening geopolitically, supply and demand. They will talk about economic indicators were showing about the market. And I realized there was so much more that I didn't know. And as me always the curious one, I went out of my way to, I told myself, you know what, whatever these guys are talking about, I want to know what it is, and I want to know more of it. And that's how basically I got interested now in macroeconomics. The economics aspect came into trading, because before that I was only looking at charts. Now I'd gotten a more holistic picture of what investment was all about, because it wasn't just about looking at charts. It's involved having information about whatever security or whatever asset it is that you're trading. And that pretty much has guided most of my, the last few years of my life. It's just been a continuous pursuit of more knowledge and expertise, and trying to become better at my analysis and understanding of the world. And I say, before I even got into, I got introduced to the macroeconomics aspect of trading, I had no interest in politics or things that were going on in the world, but markets just put me on this learning curve that sent me towards everything that I had avoided in the past, because I was now required, like it's a bare minimum to just keep up with whatever is going on in the world, because that's how you get most of the investment opportunities from whatever is going on in the world, like, because that affects how money flows in the global financial system. I can say I have greatly grown over time. I'm at a point where I can be able to make sound investment decisions as not only as an individual trader, and understand whatever is going on in the market. And as we go along on this journey, I'm looking forward to sharing more of it, giving you insight into whatever is going on, and trying to, you know, break down this jargon or things that more often than not make young people to shy away from venturing into investing as a whole. Yeah, so that's been my investment journey. I think at this juncture now, you've had the chance to hear who we are as a podcast and what you're about. And we thought it best, we'll be having this session in all our episodes, where we get to break down what's been happening in the markets over the week. So I'll start us off, just pitching out there, and then my co-host can chip in whenever they feel they have value to add at that particular point. So for the past few weeks, global markets have been pretty much shaky. Geopolitically, we've had the Taliban taking over Afghanistan. Those who keep up with such news. Afghanistan, I would say, does not have that much of an impact on the global financial system, because there are no major commodity exports coming from Afghanistan, or it's one of the poorest countries in the world. So it's just been happening, but as far as its effect on markets is concerned, it's been very minimal. But the main thing that's been happening that has been impactful on markets has been in China. You've had the Chinese Communist Party clamping down on a lot of their multinational companies, not only just tech companies, multinational companies, companies that maybe are listed in the US or they're listed offshore. So they came first of all for the tech sector, the likes of Didi. Didi is a huge Chinese tech company that wanted to IPO, but they actually ended up withdrawing the IPO because the Chinese Communist Party came in and under communism, anyone who has an understanding of communism, the state is always in a constant pursuit of more control within the system. There was a time people were really optimistic about China. They thought, oh, it's a communist country, yes, but the companies have grown up, they're so huge. Some of the biggest companies in the world are actually Chinese companies. So they thought at this point the government would let them thrive. But you've been seeing that the Communist Party was just at them on hold. We were just watching from afar, waiting for them to grow. And now we're seeing them reining them in. If you look at the stock benchmark, the Hang Seng Index. The Hang Seng Index is an index that represents blue chip stocks that trade on the Hong Kong. So it even includes the likes of Alibaba, all these big companies, Chinese companies, they're included in that index. And you've seen it has fallen over 20% from its peak in February this year. Basically, in markets, when a particular asset falls over 20%, it's usually dumped to be in a bear market. So right now, the Hang Seng Index is in a bear market because of Chinese Communist Party's clampdown on tech companies, education companies, and now, towards the end of last week, we saw another release that they want companies like the likes of Tencent. You've seen Tencent complying with the Chinese Communist Party, where they've said they want a particular percentage of their returns should be taken by the state. And also, Chinese tech companies should also sign an agreement with the Communist Party to share data with them. So there's a lot of concern coming from China. I'll leave the floor open now to my co-host to chip in.
Well, I'd say that's quite an analysis that you've come up with. Well, for Afghanistan taking over, the Taliban taking over Afghanistan, well, for me, I'd say that is more of a geopolitical risk in terms of investors, you know, putting their money into the country to work, because they really take a long time for them to recover. But there are also the news that it will be more so a terrorist state, in that even if investors do not pump in their money there, then most of the terrorist funds will just be there and might even end up being their headquarters. But that's just what has been in the blogs and the medias of late. But if I could dive into the Kenyan market for a bit, I'd say that currency have not been performing well. So people who are earning in foreign currencies, they are bound to reap some good amount. Because if you take some statistics, like there's interest rate currently being at 7%, and inflation being at 6%, then what individuals in Kenya are earning is a 0.56%. If we can be able to look at the Kenyan shilling, you will see that it has been depreciating, and people earning in foreign currencies have been earning a good return. In that, for somebody having a dollar, be able to exchange their farms to 109.50 cents around there. So what does this mean? If you look at the interest rate and the inflation rate, we are only earning 0.56% in our money. So that means the rest of it, of the interest, goes to inflation. So as investors, what should we do with such statistics in our mind? Well, if you want to be ahead of the game, then you really need to find a way where to put your money to work so that you cannot earn that 0.56%. So if you're able to earn a return of even, let's say you're one of the scared investors, you can put your money in inflation index bonds,
but as usual, cash is trash because inflation will still end up eating your money, but it's better off than just leaving it at the bank. So you need to be really cautious where you put your money and look for yield wherever you can possible in the market.
That was really nuanced, and I think one thing that most people don't consider, most Kenyans assume that the exchange rate is only a concern of people who are mostly importers, people importing goods. As a country, we have been running a deficit for a while now, for a couple of decades now. And as a country that is a net importer, changes in our exchange rate against the dollar, which is the global reserve currency, whether you like it or not, it trickles down to your purchases on a day-to-day basis. And it's very essential that even as a Kenyan, we keep up with whatever is going on. And if you have actually an option, if your bank provides an option, you can get a fixed deposit account that is maybe denominated in dollars, just to shield yourself from that depreciation of our local currency, which is the shilling against the dollar. Abraham, do you have anything to share with?
Yeah, I think I may not get much into the issues of exchange rates, but the two things you had mentioned about Afghanistan and Didi, the first one, of course, being Afghanistan, you know, you've kind of dismissed it in terms of its contribution to the global financial market, which arguably is accurate. But actually, I actually came across a certain tweet, like, was it 2-3 days ago, about in terms of the trade volume we have as a country with them, and how it has dropped over the years and how it's likely to drop even further with now the Taliban having taken control of the same. So I think it's just something to take note of, that they're definitely one of the countries export to, maybe not that heavily, we don't trade with them that heavily, but I mean, from an international trade perspective, we've already, or rather we're going to receive quite a hit as a country. And you know, that has a net effect all the way to the small man, who of course relies on this trade in order to get by. So it's just something to bear in our mind that, yeah, definitely they may not be such a big contributor, but the Taliban taking over does have a direct effect on the Kenyan market in terms of its exports. I'm not quite sure the exports, so I don't know if it's tea or something of the sort, but I know we're going to definitely get quite hit. Secondly, when it comes to the Didi issue, you really talked about it comprehensively. I can't add so much to it, but it's China at the end of the day. And is it the Communist Party? Yeah, it's very authoritarian in nature. I've never even understood the economic system. It's such an interesting blend of capitalism and socialism and what. And maybe you guys can explain more on that. But just considering the ideology that the guys at the top have, even in relation to private businesses, maybe we should have seen this coming. Although I've seen there's also some lawsuit regarding some of the disclosure issues related to Didi in the US, and we're waiting to see how that develops. But I know there's an action that's taking place at the moment in regard to not having disclosed the right information to investors through their prospectus. Yeah, so I think that's about my take on some of the issues that have been talked about so far.
That's actually quite fundamental, if you ask me, because our exports are going to be affected.
If you look at the Taliban now, compared to 20 years ago when they were running Afghanistan, there's almost a rebranding. First of all, as a person, on a personal level, I don't believe that you can just rebrand yourself and call yourself something different and everyone else will just be like, oh, you've changed. But they have rebranded themselves, and if the PR they've been putting out lately, and if that is anything to go by, I think they're going to start renegotiating a lot of their trade agreements. So it's almost like when there's a regime change in a country, maybe there's a coup or something, and the new power comes in and they want to do business their own way. So country by country will eventually approach the Taliban to try to, you know, negotiate new trade deals and try to set up new relationships with the country. So we'll see how that goes. And also on the issue of Afghanistan being taken, I do want to go really into a lot of the geopolitics, but how often do you see the US leave a country and start saying there was a press release a couple of days ago. I think the press secretary said something in the fact that the Taliban would form an inclusive government or something of that sort. It's almost as if the US has just lifted their hands and like, you know what? We've washed our hands off of this. We'll let you do whatever you're doing there. It's almost as if the West is letting the Taliban take over the government. And when it comes to most of these international issues, geopolitics and all that, there's always more than what meets the eye. I was even in a Twitter discussion with someone, and I highlighted the fact that the Taliban, on all, most of those pictures taken, they were actually brandished, you know, US manufactured weapons. And you didn't hear any outcry from the US, or how did they get these weapons, or how is this, did this happen? It's almost as if there's an implied approval of whatever is going on in Afghanistan. I'm not going to speculate further unless we turn this podcast into one of those Alex Jones, you know, type of podcast where people just spit out all these conspiracy theories, but it's definitely something to keep up with. And going forward, it's something that's definitely worth following up. And the funny thing is that a couple of weeks ago, people were talking about Palestine and Israel. Now it's almost as if people have forgotten, they've jumped on to the next thing. It's not like people are concerned about most of these issues. They just want to sound woke, or they want to sound cool to their friends by talking about all these issues. I think even talking about it as a practitioner, or as an economist, or as a trader, in a sense of trying to build your investment thesis, it's more nuanced in the sense that, you know, there's an end to you talking about the topic. But someone who's just talking about it and they're not doing anything, that's a whole other story. One more thing about local markets. We have the likes
of definitely the banks.
Yeah, Equity, KCB, they're growing regionally, and the share prices have been reflecting all that optimism. Safaricom also hit all-time highs this week. So definitely a lot to be excited about. No, those guys, there's always those guys who bought these stocks during the IPOs, they don't know, 2 shillings. It's during such times when they're eating all-time highs that you start seeing those tweets. Oh yeah, I bought at 4 shillings, I'm still holding, or taking some profits here and there. So it's good to keep up with these things, because you usually see, because most of people are celebrating now, they invested years ago when people were not necessarily excited about those particular counters. So when you see these 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds celebrating that they bought during the IPO, if you're a young person and you're listening to this, it should get you thinking, what is that one thing today that I can buy that I can be very proud of in 40 years, in 20, 30, 40 years? It's something to actually think about, how you, as you grow as a person and start buying some of these companies. That's as far as what we had to cover for today. Unless my co-hosts have anything further to add, Abra?
I don't think there's much really to add to it. Just to probably highlight also that I saw a lot of not a lot, but some notable companies releasing the results, especially banks. Mm-hmm. And it's good news, you know, to see that profit has been realized. Of course, after COVID came last year, and now things are shaping up. I think Equity had about a jump of 94% in its profit. KCB also had a lot of profit. Cooperative Bank also released unaudited results and seemed profitable. So maybe these are signs of things going back to normal slowly, especially from an economic perspective. So just wanted to highlight that, even as you talked about the all-time high that the NSE has hit this week.
Awesome, Michael.
Yeah, that's so true. And also, to add on that, also CIC, Insurance Group. In 1 month, it made over 57% gain. So investors made more than 57% of their money in less than 1 month. So that's something to really look forward to. Somebody had $1 million, Bob invested there, made 57% rather than putting it to the bank, waiting a whole year for 7%. So I guess we really need to know where to put our money. Literal sense.
True. And as far as local markets are concerned, I can literally talk about this forever. But today, for our first episode, we thought it best to give you an inkling of who we are as a podcast. And going forward, most of the issues that we've talked about, you might not necessarily be privy to them or know what's going on, but we'll be covering them as time goes by. I'm certainly love on the tide, so purely on China and how things are going on there, and even local markets, we'll be covering them. So if whatever we talked about today went off your head, not to worry. The podcast, we will be covering each of these going forward. And we've had a good episode. We're glad to have you over, and we look forward to growing with you. Have a great week.